Edge with Chris Graham.
Let's talk some UVA football. Chris Graham here on the podcast, and we are in Louisville game week as Virginia at 5-2 will face Louisville at 4-3. Virginia favorite on the road, a 3.5-point favorite last I checked, heading into the weekend matchup. 3:30 on Saturday. I'll give you a heads up here. We will be covering the World Series this weekend. Augustine Press heading to D.C. We will be in Nats Park for games 3, 4, and 5, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And what that means as far as our coverage of UVA football, that will, for 1 week, be on the back burner. And I hate to be that way. Man, it's just tough. But the UVA Louisville games at 3:30 on Saturday, 3:30 Eastern on Saturday. The baseball games at 8 o'clock, 8:08 first pitch on Saturday night. And so as a result, I'm going to be doing pregame there at Nats Park and getting there early, getting set up. So we won't have coverage of the UVA Louisville game until well into the early hours of Sunday morning. So you can check back to us probably first thing when you wake up on Sunday for our coverage, insight, etc. From our team. I just won't be physically in a place where I can push buttons and make it happen on Saturday night. So that said, we will still do our thorough pregame or postgame coverage, and thorough pregame coverage. I guess I misspoke, but in a good way, because we're doing some of that right now, getting you ready for Louisville. And I got to tell you, this one has my attention. I mean, going into the season, you know, Louisville, the dumpster fire that it was at the last of the Bobby Petrino era from last year, you looked at this on the schedule from a UVA fan standpoint and thought, well, there's a win. This is probably a win, but it's not going to be as easy as you might have thought going into the season. This Louisville team I mentioned, 4-3 this year, already have a win over a top 25 team, Wake Forest, 62-59 win 2 weeks ago. I'm not sure the basketball game between these two will be 62-59 necessarily, right? We'll be paying attention to that in ACC season. Louisville lost, suffered really its only, in my opinion, bad loss. Not bad in the sense of losing to a bad team, but big, ugly loss. 45-10 to Clemson last week, and it was still a game. It was 17-3 late in the third quarter before Clemson broke it open, made it look bad, 45-10. This team also lost to Notre Dame, 35-17. Game was 17-14 at halftime. We're kind of familiar with that. Virginia was up 17-14 on Notre Dame in Notre Dame Stadium. Louisville was trailing 17-14, and that game got away from them in the second half. This is also a team that played Florida State in the fourth quarter, actually had a lead in the fourth quarter before losing 35-24. Virginia, of course, played Florida State really tight, won 31-24. I mean, so there's some similarities here that I would point out between these two. Bronco Mendenhall's got his attention on this. Talked about how dynamic offensively Louisville is, certainly capable and active defensively. We'll talk more about that in a second. I think he's being nice here, but the offense is good. Right now, they're probably more known for their offensive explosion and firepower, and that side seems to be performing a little in their first year at a higher level. First year talking about Louisville's first-year head coach replacing Bobby Petrino, Scott Satterfield. And the offense is purring. One thing you can say, Bobby Petrino didn't leave the cupboard bare on that side of the ball. Last year, he couldn't get him to play, but there's talent there. And this Louisville team, fourth in the ACC total offense, 456.7 yards per game. And they're playing two quarterbacks. You know, there's that old rule about if you got two quarterbacks, you don't really have one. Well, they're playing two guys. And as a unit, Louisville's quarterbacks have the best pass efficiency rating in the ACC. That's interesting. You know, you're playing two quarterbacks, and you know, the unit is performing at that level. Mikael Cunningham, I swear he used to be known as Malik Cunningham, and I'm finding some things there. 61.8% completion rate, 7 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. He's a redshirt sophomore. True freshman Evan Conley, 58.3% completion rate, 4 TDs, 2 INTs. They've been playing back and forth the last 3 weeks, kind of like Satterfield's going with the hot hand, and it's working. You know, last week he had the loss to Clemson, but the two previous weeks, 41-39 win over Boston College, 62-59, I mentioned, over Wake Forest. You know, the offense stagnated last week, but that's probably as much Clemson as it is anything else. Bronco Mendenhall talked about the challenge of having to play, get ready for a team with two quarterbacks. I mean, Cunningham is a little bit more dangerous with his feet. He's, you know, obviously he can throw the ball well too. Conley is a little more dangerous with his downfield throwing, but the comments from Mendenhall, obviously you don't have enough time to prepare for two guys. So what you do is you try to make them one, in a sense. And I can see where he's going with this. He said, I wouldn't see them altering anything significantly because they're having so much success offensively. So I would think both quarterbacks are going to play. We'll do our best to say they're a single quarterback. One might be a little better thrower, the other's a little better runner. But what you do, instead of preparing for, okay, we're going to prepare for Conley's sets and we're going to prepare for Cunningham's sets, you kind of just prepare for the offense. And then you make your play calls accordingly, just based on the offense and the tendencies, instead of saying, okay, now Conley's in, what are we going to do different that we don't normally do, or that we didn't normally do when Cunningham was in, back and forth, vice versa. You'll hear me talk about this again in a second, but this is strength against strength in one sense. I talked about the best pass efficiency rating in the ACC for the Louisville quarterbacks. Virginia ranks second in the ACC in passing yards allowed, second in sacks, and fourth in pass defense efficiency. So, you know, it's a pass defense that's one of the best in the ACC, the pass offense that's one of the best in the ACC. Louisville's also third in the ACC in rushing offense, another strength against strength. Virginia's tied for second in rush defense. So, certainly it's a matchup of a high-powered offense against a stout defense. Feature back for Louisville is a redshirt freshman, Javian Hawkins, averaged 107.3 yards per game. That's fourth in the ACC, 5.5 yards carry. No doubt helped a bit by the fact that, you know, Louisville's offense does employ a lot of read option. It's a similar offense to what you might remember a much better quarterback, because he won a Heisman, Lamar Jackson, ran when he was there under Petrino. Really gets a lot of opportunities for their run game as a result. Cunningham is the bigger threat in the run game. Averages 8.3 attempts a game, and he's gaining 4.3 yards, and that includes some sack yards being taken out. Hassan Hall's the backup at running back, and he averages 10 carries a game, so he gets a lot of totes for a backup. The passing game is interesting. They really primarily use three guys. These guys make the bulk of their catches: Jatarius Atwell, Fitzpatrick, and Seth Dawkins. And what's interesting about them is when you look at their yards per catch, 15.9, 19.6, 20.2, this is part of how the Louisville offense, the quarterbacks, are so have the great passer rating they have. The completion percentages are what you see from other guys, between 58 and 60%, but it's the yards per completion. This is not a dink and dunk offense. They'll run the ball well, and when they throw it downfield. And so, that's what Bronco Mendenhall talked about: bring the big play capabilities that Louisville brings. Playmaking, space, speed, and ability. There's big play potential. Louisville is dynamic, Mendenhall said. They're dynamic at quarterback. They're dynamic at running back. They're dynamic at receiver. So much like Louisville seems to always be, since at least I've been in the league, Mendenhall said. They're exceptional athletes. There's a big play threat that just kind of always hanging over your head, that this play could go the whole way. So you have to be sound on your tackling. If you're rushing a quarterback, you've got to stay in your lanes. You can't, you can't freelance if you're either one of the three down linemen or one of the edge guys, Charles Snowden, Zane Zandier. You've got to stay disciplined to keep the field balanced against this Louisville team, because if you don't, and you're slightly out of position, you could get exploited big time. When you're out there on the edge too, the cornerback's going to have to be very cognizant on some of those quick passes to the sideline, to be sound in their tackling, because if you miss a tackle, that could turn a 5-yard play into an 80-yard play. That's certainly a concern for this Virginia defense. On the other side of the ball, the matchup of the UVA offense and Louisville defense. Louisville's clearly their weaknesses on the defensive side of the ball. They're 14th in scoring defense in the ACC, 12th in total defense, 13th in rushing defense, 11th in pass defense, 12th in pass defense efficiency. You look at the scores of their games most recently: 62-59, 41-39, 35-24, 35-17, 45-10. Lots of big numbers. I mentioned in a column that I wrote on this game, previewing the game, the Satterfield 1.0 version of Louisville football was built to win track meets, not defensive slogs. So, you know, the Virginia offense, of course, has been anemic. Offensive line has been an issue. Last week, though, the 48 points in the win over Duke may be suggesting an emergence of this offense for UVA. The offensive line played well. Bryce Perkins, the efficiency in the red zone, 7 for 9 in the red zone, 5 touchdowns in the red zone. When I was talking about the UVA Duke game, it turned into a 48-14 UVA win. But looking at those two teams last week, there were certainly a lot of turnovers by Duke, and that really contributed 27 points off of turnovers for UVA in that win, and 7 on a kickoff return. When I was thinking 17-14, I was thinking they were so evenly matched. Two teams with really good defenses, two teams with struggling offenses. This is an interesting one. You got a great offense in Louisville, a great defense in UVA. You've got a pretty bad defense in Louisville and a struggling offense in UVA. I'll be nice when I say that about the UVA offense. Hopefully it's improving. So it's different in that sense. It's so different. It's going to be hard to tell from how this game's going to play out standpoint, just in terms of the score or where the score range will be. You know, last week I felt pretty confident that it was going to be a game in the teens. And I guess if you take away all the sloppiness on the part of Duke, it probably still would have been a relatively low-scoring game. This could range anywhere from a low-scoring game if the UVA defense is able to prevent the big plays from Louisville and keep it keep Louisville's offense down, to a high-scoring game if Louisville scores and Virginia is able to take advantage of Louisville's defense. I mean, it could be a game in the 30s as well. I tend to think that UVA is going to pull this one out, somewhere in the range of a touchdown plus victory. It's really hard to get a feel for this game because these two teams are so different going in. Some other news and notes from UVA football that we should go into. This was an interesting tidbit from Bronco Mendenhall's press conference. So he talked about how with Brennan Armstrong back, and that was one of the depth chart news items of the week. Brennan Armstrong is back on the depth chart. He's QB2 again. The redshirt freshman had been out since the William & Mary game, after the William & Mary game. He was 9 for 10 in that game with a pick six as the incomplete pass. But he suffered what was talked about as a turf toe injury, kind of injury that could keep you out for the year if things don't go well. But he was actually medically cleared last week. Mendenhall talked about how Armstrong could have been used the backup last week. It turns out Lindell Stone got in the game when it was a blowout and threw a couple passes, including an interception. The decision was made just because he hadn't had any game practice time, or at least a lot of practice time, that Armstrong was held out of last week, in terms of being the backup. But he is the backup now. And so what Mendenhall is saying is, now we can really use Bryce Perkins in the run game, which he can now be used a lot in the run game. I pointed this out. Now, so Armstrong wasn't the backup this week, and Perkins was used 22 times in the run game for 62 yards, 3 rushing touchdowns. Perkins has had double-digit touches as a runner all season long. Now, the Notre Dame game was a little bit by default. The college game counts sacks as rushing attempts. So he was sacked 8 times in that game, had a total of 16 carries, but really only 8 runs. But every other game, he's had legitimate double-digit touches as a runner. Now, again, factor some things out. You could factor out some scrambles and say, he was maybe only used 9 times or 8 times. I haven't broken that down all the way. I have to go back to the play-by-play, and that can be a laborious task. But point being, he's been used a lot as a runner, and now Bronco says the blinders are off, the reins are off, whatever. We're going to use him now, right? Here's the quote. I don't have a certain number of plays, but we do have yardage thresholds and point thresholds that we go after, and we know what kind of yardage marks and what point marks traditionally, as I've been the head coach with the staff, and what those take to win, and we intend to use every player we have to get to those marks. And if that means running the quarterback more, we'll do that. So a guy who ran it 22 times last week, will run it more. It's a concern if you ask me. Perkins is, and I thought last week, and I'll just say this: this is, you know, whatever trained eye I've got, kind of talking here. I was a little concerned last week that Perkins, even on this plays you would classify scrambles, it was almost like he was coached into, all right, first read is covered, take off. If it had been more effective, like in terms of if they had noticed something, for example, if Duke was playing zone playing man, and the guys weren't peeking in the backfield, they weren't using a spy, and you looked at your first read, you noticed that, and you took off running and got 10 yards of play, that'd be one thing. But he averaged less than 3 yards a carry. And so that what that suggests to me is, instead of it being something that was effective, it was more just a don't trust your line, so to speak. And I thought the line actually protected him pretty well. Second half especially, you really saw him get some time to stand back there and make some nice throws, and was able to connect with his receivers. But there were too many dropbacks where, again, it just seemed like Perkins would look at his first read if it was covered, and actually sometimes not even covered. I mean, so there were at least a couple instances I saw from the press box, you know, that slightly elevated perch where you can watch what you want to watch instead of watching the TV, camera follow where it wants to follow, where, he would have an open receiver, even sort of a dump off or just a sort of safety valve kind of guy, and he just chose to run. And so, again, I don't know if that's coaching. It seemed like last year Perkins, that wasn't the case with him a lot. He was more patient back in the pocket, and maybe that's a factor of he got sacked 13 times in the previous 2 weeks leading into this week. I don't know. I mean, just kind of thinking out loud here, but I'd like to see a little more emphasis perhaps on maybe going through your second and third progressions before you take off. But that's me saying that, not a coach or a player during the middle of a game kind of seeing it themselves. So let's see. And the other news of the week from a depth chart perspective, so Brandon Armstrong available. Ryan Svoboda is listed as LT1 and RT2, left tackle, starter, right tackle. He's the backup. So that's a sign of how late we are in the season. Sorry, I'm still struggling a little bit with the lingering effects of this cold. Gatorading up here, get myself back in the swing of things here. But Ryan Svoboda, 6'10", 300 pounds, just a sophomore. He was in a walking cast on the sidelines on Saturday. Gosh, I have to get some more Gatorade here. And Mendenhall said he's not sure of Svoboda's status. Now, he's still, again, listed on the depth chart as a starter and as a backup at two different positions. Not sure of his status for Saturday's game. I don't know what that means then, because definitely throws some question. Bobby Haskins, the sophomore, would obviously jump up at left tackle. He's listed as the backup left tackle, and then I'm not sure who would be backing up Rinkensmeyer at right tackle as far as that goes. But not a lot of other changes in the depth chart, though I will say that I've been displeased with the depth charts. It seems like guys are hidden. This is in a very Bill Belichickian way from our view, in terms of, you'll look at the depth chart, you think you know which the situation is going into the game, and then guys are either out or not out. And we really have been given no indication of that until, honestly, we show up and see a guy on the field or not on the field, in street clothes or in full uniform or whatever the case may be. So a little disappointed as far as that goes. It seems to me a little bit of an abuse of the system, but it is what it is. If it's not being policed by anybody, I guess, what's the difference, right? Except for just transparency. Other UVA football news. This has nothing to do with game action, but kind of a nice note. The ACC releasing today. It's Legends class, the 2019 ACC Legends class, folks who will be honored at the ACC championship game in December in Charlotte. And Virginia's guy this year will be Don Majkowski. The Magic Man. Remember the Magic Man? Those were the first good years of UVA football. 84 to 86, he was the three-year starter at UVA. Led UVA to its first bowl game and first bowl win, 27-24 for Purdue in the 1984 Peach Bowl. I was 12 years old. I was in seventh grade. I was already a UVA fan, already bleeding orange and blue. I remember that game vividly. The Purdue quarterback? Chuck Long, I think it was the quarterback for Purdue. Ended up having a long NFL career. Murkowski, of course, ended up going to an NFL career as well with Green Bay. When Murkowski was – when he finished his career at UVA in 86, at that time he was the second leading passer in school history. He became a starter in the NFL with the Packers, as I mentioned. He was a starter there for 6 years, for most of 6 years, played in 68 games. Threw 56 touchdown passes, over 10,000 yards passing. Led the NFL in passing in 1989 with 4,318 yards. That was back in the day, 4,318, getting over 4,000 in the late 80s was a big deal. It was still a lot, very much a running league back still in the 80s. Not like now when everybody could throw for 4,000 yards just based on the number of attempts. After leaving Green Bay, something happened. There was some guy named Favre that was the reason he had to leave Green Bay. You might have heard of this Favre guy. Murkowski played two seasons with the Colts and with the Lions, later inducted in the Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame in 2005. It was a nice honor for him. And kind of looking through the other guys who will be honored as part of the ACC Legends, not a lot of names I'm familiar with. There is Miami's Bernie Kosar. That's a familiar name. Julius Peppers from North Carolina, that's one that kind of stands out, certainly. Let's see, D'Angelo Hall from Virginia Tech. Man, D'Angelo Hall, that's a guy that was just recently in the NFL still. That's all. That's at the ACC Championship game, or festivities around the ACC Championship game. December 7th is the game. They'll be honored on the field. Also, a ceremony on December 6th, the night before, Friday night. And we hope we're all there, right? Don't we? Win this weekend over Louisville, very important. I mean, this UVA schedule is so odd. You started on the road at Pitt. Bronco Mendenhall will tell you he'd prefer to start with a tune-up game, but he started on the road at Pitt. ACC said so. ACC Network's launching. Gotta have you there. Then three at home. Then four of your next five on the road. We just played the home game in that stretch last week, Duke. Two more on the road, Louisville, North Carolina. Then you got three at home with a bye week in the middle of those three at home to finish out. So UVA's 5-2 now, 3-1 in the ACC. To say these are important games, this week Louisville, next week at North Carolina and Chapel Hill, if you can win them both, you finish out at home with Georgia Tech, a team that's, they got a big win over Miami this past week, but a team that, you would be favored to beat. And Virginia Tech, 5-2 themselves, but you'd be favored to beat them. So if you can win these next two, that trip to Charlotte in December can come to fruition. So big one for the Hoos this weekend with Louisville. And again, we'll stay on top of the latest developments, any news in terms of player availability heading into Saturday. And then again, just a reminder, our post-game coverage will be delayed because we're also covering the World Series. Nah, it's just hard, There's a lot going on right now. The World Series, we cover the Nats as closely as we cover UVA, and we're not used to covering the Nats this late in the year. So World Series demands its attention, and they only play one of them a year. So, but we'll still have the usual post-game coverage, just a little delayed on after Saturday's game in Louisville. And then, of course, we'll get you ready for next week in Chapel Hill. That's a lot coming down the road. But in any case, I want to thank you for listening. If you have any comments, any questions, any issues you want me to address on a future podcast or in a future column, email me at AugustaFreePress2@gmail.com. You can also tweet at me, I guess, at AUG Free Press. Snail mail, it's fine. I don't usually pay too much attention to it, but you can find our address somewhere, right? But we'd love to hear from you. Certainly love to hear from you. Good, bad, indifferent, whatever the case may be. Just human interaction. Kind of cool, right? Thank you again for listening to our podcast, and we will talk to you again soon.